So the question is, what's the difference between history and legend? And legend. What makes something historical fact, and what makes something legend? Is that a fair question? Let's flesh it out a little bit, just to give you a clarity of where we're going with this. This is a very good question. So let's try to distinguish something which happened historically, okay? George Washington. You've heard of him? Fabulous. Yes, he ride on his bridge many times. Okay, George Washington. Did he exist?
Yes.
Are you sure?
Yes.
50%? 60%? 100%?
Yes.
Rosie, good. Okay, so George Washington lived. So his existence, the fact that he lived and he was president of America, is that history or is it legend?
History.
It's history. Okay. So we're going to put this into the history category. Okay. Loch Ness Monster. Loch Ness Monster. Right? That big sea creature which many have seen and taken pictures of. Although it's a little blurry for some reason. It's always blurry. I don't know why. Right? History or legend?
Legend.
Legend. You sure? Anyone here thinks it's historical and reality? No one at all? Okay. George Washington had a certain incident with a tree from his childhood. Don't anyone remember that? Right, there was a cherry tree, and he chopped it down as a kid. Do you remember that story from school? Remember that? And what happened with that at Harvard? Do you remember the story? He chopped it down. His father said, "Who chopped it down?" And he said, "I can't lie. It was I did it. I did it." So here we have our future president, George Washington, and he has a certain cherry tree that's cut down. Did that happen?
Possibly.
Is it history or is it legend?
Legend.
So I think the cherry tree would also fall into legend. It may have happened. It may have happened, but we're not too sure. We're actually not too sure. Maybe it did, and maybe it didn't. We're not so clear on that one. Okay. Let's do some more. Abraham Lincoln. Did he exist?
Yes.
Okay. Was there a civil war in this country? Right. Did he take one of the sides and try to free the slaves? Yeah. Okay. History or legend?
History.
History. I think you're right. I think we can consider that historical fact. What's the difference between history and legend? What's the difference between history and legend? Yes, Whitney.
Usually with history, there's some kind of actual proof, whether it's written down at the time, whether there's a second person seeing it, whether there's someone that can tell a story.
Okay, so says Whitney, we need to have some kind of proof. We need to have some kind of proof that it actually happened. Okay? Now, you mentioned a couple of things. What did you mention? Let's go through this.
Another person telling the story.
Okay, so we need an account. A story that it happened. Okay. What else?
Depending on the time era, photo evidence.
Photo evidence is good. Okay. Photo evidence is going to help us. What else can we do? Rosie? Celia? Mina? What else can we do here? How did that stuff happen in the past? What makes history history, not legend?
Isn't it?
Yeah?
You have things written
accounts. Okay, so there's verbal accounts. Okay, fine. And we're going to have written accounts. Okay. We have verbal accounts. We have photo evidence. Right? We have written accounts. Yeah?
I feel like history is just like straight up like facts and legend is like...
So you want to say that what makes history history and legend legend are straight up facts. So I'll put that down. But
no, but like legend is like, yeah, like expanding
So maybe it did happen, maybe it didn't happen. I mean, what we're really going to say is history we kind of know happened, right? And legend we don't know, okay? So we're going to assume that if they're facts, they happened. How they happened, in what way, we could discuss. But we're trying to really figure out what do you need to do to get something into here or into here? That's what we're trying to figure out here. We're just trying to figure it out in our heads a little bit. Try to think it out. Witnesses, okay. Witnesses, okay. That could help you. That could help you, possibly. Possibly. Okay. So let's try to concretize it a little bit more and make it a little more passionate. Okay. So once again, we're trying to figure out, you know, history, legend. How about the Holocaust?
History.
Sarah, you were very unequivocal about that. All right, that's straight away, right? Well, there's been a question to you, yeah? So we're going to put Holocaust over here. Okay. What's the claim of the Holocaust?
It didn't happen.
Now, what's the claim that... what happened? What makes it history?
That it didn't
happen. To?
Us, our people.
Okay. What happened?
Mass extermination of 6 million.
Thank you so much. How about mass extermination of 6 million Jews based purely upon the fact that they were Jews? Yeah, I mean, yeah, you sure about that? Okay, fantastic. So you have 6 million Jews who were killed because they were Jews. Okay? So something weird's going on. All of a sudden, we start to see more and more, many, many people. Not just like, you know, random individuals, but heads of state, academics, university professors, entire populations sometimes, go to the Middle East, who say that this Holocaust thing, which we're basically gonna double click on this Holocaust thing, okay, because, you know, didn't happen. It's not history, it's legend. How are we gonna verify, okay, and we're doing this for a reason. This is gonna be our mashal, this is gonna be our analogy for something else. Okay? How are we going to verify that this actually happened? So let's have a look at some of the proofs which Whitney and others mentioned. We have verbal accounts. Are there verbal accounts?
Yes.
Yes, they are. Is there photo evidence?
Yes.
Mm. Are there written accounts?
Yes.
Are there facts attached to it?
Yes.
Were there witnesses?
Yes.
So we have all of these things, and yet people still deny it ever happened. Although, say, well, maybe they deserved it. But many people say, well, it didn't even happen to 6 million. Maybe a couple hundred thousand. And they didn't actually try to exterminate. They were put into camps. And they ended up dying from other diseases, you know. But to say they were taken and put inside the ovens. And, I mean, the Holocaust has another advantage when it comes to understanding, believing, and that the concentration camps that exist, you know. You can go visit them. We have physical evidence, don't we? We have actual physical evidence of something that happened very recently. It's not like George Washington. I've never met him, right? I never met Abraham Lincoln. Yet for me, it's a given, you know. I just look at, you know, the dollar bills, you know, and I see. But over here, I have all this evidence. I can even see it. And even the people who perpetrated it have come forward and said, yeah, we did it. Wait till I do, I'm going to kill them. And yet people are still willing to say, nah, not history, legend. Isn't that weird? Strange, right? So if all these things, all these proofs are not going to work, then what can we do? What can we do about this? You know? And let me play devil's advocate for a second. 1 second, I have her. Because I know people get passionate about this. But I'm going to be devil's advocate. You prove it to me. Verbal accounts? What? They saw 6 million die? Yeah, we have family over there, family over there. We've heard Holocaust speakers. Maybe they saw little things happening. Photo evidence? We can't plagiarize a photo. Written accounts? Hey, newspapers lie all the time. You know? Facts? These aren't facts. This is just conjecture. Witnesses? We had witnesses to all of them dying. Physical evidence? Physical evidence? They were just made up. You know, sympathy, which the Zionists wanted to create a state of Israel, they'll see a number of things, movies, even videos of it. Well, what can you say about that? Well, hey, Schindler's List, you've all seen that. Looked like the real thing. Majority of that wasn't filmed in Poland, right, or Germany. It was filmed in California. So we've lost something over here. And this is within our parents, if not our grandparents' lifetime. We still have people who were there and witnessed this, and yet we're having this big, big problem. Okay, now, I don't want to discuss the Holocaust today. I'm using that as an example. But I have an idea. I have an idea. How about this? We have to tell the world that the Holocaust happened. Okay? We want to get this information out, because as each survivor dies, we're further away. And if in 70 years, however far we are, people are still denying it ever happened, what can we do to keep the memory going? I mean, you build museums and seminars and conferences and all the rest of it, and have witnesses and make movies of survivors. But in the end, it's very, very difficult to verify this information, right? It's getting more and more difficult. Okay. So I want to suggest something. And it goes like this. I want to suggest that we start a society called the HMS. The HMS is the Holocaust Memorial Society. What's the purpose of this society? The purpose of the society is to keep the memory of the Holocaust going. How's that sound? So how do you become a member? How should I be a member of the HMS? What do you think? What should we do? So how about this? How about you have to be a survivor in order to be a member, or the descendant of a survivor? Okay, because these are going to die. But there'll always be descendants, we assume, somewhere. Okay, a child, a grandchild, you know, some direct descendant of the original survivor. Okay? Now, we can't just make a group because people aren't going to do anything. So we're going to start to attach stuff to it. Okay? So if you're a member of the HMS Holocaust Memorial Society, yeah, we are going to need something from you. We're going to need you, check this out, to wear a yellow star. Have to wear a yellow star. That's if you yourself, or your parent, or your grandparent, your great-grandparent, you're a descendant. Have to wear a yellow star all the time. You can walk around the streets, wherever you live. You could be living in Israel, living in France, living in Russia. Walk around with a yellow star on your arm like that for everyone to see. Not only that, if you're a member of the HMS, we're going to need you as well to get a tattoo. What tattoo should you get? How about the number that was on your grandmother's arm from Auschwitz? Crazy, right? Okay, the number of the arm that was on the arm, grandmother. So every descendant is going to have the same tattoo. So someone's going to see you one day and like, what's on your arm? Like, oh, that's a yellow star. Why are you wearing that? Because my great-grandmother, who's now passed away, she was in Auschwitz-Birkenau. She went through terrible suffering, and people don't believe that happened. So my grandfather wore this in memory of her, and my father, and I do as well. And my children as well are going to get this as well. And why is that number on your arm? The same thing, right? This is the exact same number that every single generation has worn since the Holocaust. Okay, because I'm part of the HMS. How about this? How about any member of the HMS has got to get together once a year? All members, wherever you are in your community, family, friends, community, and they're going to make a meal. They're going to make a meal. And this meal, it's going to be the same date for everyone, for the entire world, if you're a member of the HMS. We're going to get together with our little yellow stars and our little tattoos, and we're going to sit to have this meal. Now, what should we have for this meal? Can't be a big fancy meal. Let's make a meal that reminds us of what our great-great-grandparents went through. So, we'll have, what kind of bread do they eat in Auschwitz-Birkenau or Majdanek? hard bread, would you say? So I have a really hard bread. Is that, you know what I'm saying? It's not going to be like a fresh bread, you know what I'm saying? A hard, crackery bread. How about potatoes? Right, because they had potatoes back then. That was like, you know, the diet over there. Maybe these people had little potatoes, you know? How about we just take the skin off the potato, okay? And then, I mean, everyone cried, obviously. There's a lot of crying, you know, during the whole Holocaust. So we're going to take the potato, and we're going to dip it into salt water. Why would we do that? Because that should remind us of all the tears that our ancestors cried. So we're going to take some of the potato, we're going to dip it into the salt water just to remember that. You know, after the war, people didn't just go home. It was very, very difficult, you see, to just go home. You know, passports, borders were closed. So many people had to go to DP camps. My mother-in-law was born in a DP camp, a displaced person camp, okay? So I want to remember that. I want to remember what happened after the whole war thing, you know? So what we're going to do is we're going to try to remember the displaced person camps. Let's make a once a year, separate from this one, because that remembers what happened, but what happened afterwards, how all these people were homeless for such a long time, right? Our great-great-grandparents. So whoever's a member of the HMS is going to now live in a hut or a tent, okay, for, I don't know, a week. And we're going to move in. It's kind of our home. And in front of me, saying, are you crazy? Sir, are you nuts? You're living in a tent. He goes, well, you understand, my parents did this, my grandparents, my great-grandparents, and it goes back every single generation. We all remember what happened to our great-great-great-grandfather, great-great-great-grandmother. On both sides, there were survivors, and many died, they lost so many siblings. So I remember that. So we're going to live in a tent. And they say, what's this tent represent? This tent represents the tent that they all lived in after they were freed, after they were liberated from their camps. How about this? How about we really make this into a big, special, amazing event? How about we bring thousands of Jews to the Kotel? Okay? Kotel, you know, Jerusalem, whatever. And we go to the Western Wall in Jerusalem, and we gather everyone together. And what we're going to do, we're going to have a big, big event. Who fought? For the HMS members. So only if you were there in the Holocaust, or your children or grandchildren, but if you're part of that, you can go there, and we're going to have a big event, and we're going to have survivors give an account. Account of what happened. Remember the account? This account thing. And it's going to be verbal, and we're going to write it down as well. Okay? And we're going to take this account of what happened, and we're going to do it in different languages, right? Because it's going to be French Jews, it's going to be Russian Jews, and there's going to be Israeli Jews, and there's going to be English Jews, there's going to be Orange Jews, and yeah. And we have all the views, so we're going to better account, and we're going to have them write it down. And we're going to take all these different accounts on a piece of paper, and we're going to make it into one scroll. We're going to make a scroll of all these accounts. Okay? Now, this scroll is very important, you see, because it has the evidence, the first eyewitness testimony of what happened over there. So we're going to make a law. And it's going to sound crazy. I know it's going to sound crazy. But put it into perspective. The law is going to be that if anyone changes one letter from this scroll, we're going to have to kill them. That's like crazy, isn't it? Well, this is very, very important, right? Because what do we have over here? We have an account that happened to a lot of people that we need to keep going, okay? And if you change the number 6 to the number 4, it isn't 6 million, it's 4 million. And if you change the word Hitler to Mittler, it's, I mean, we've lost the whole thing. So we need it to be word perfect and number perfect. So it sounds extreme, I know. Now, let's say we're all members of the HMS, okay? And we're doing all of this, right? We got our yellow star, and we got our tattoo, and we make these meals, okay? Once a week, you got to get together with other members of the HMS for, I don't know, an hour or two, and you got to read a piece of this scroll. So it's not just a scroll like a book on the shelf, like Encyclopedia Britannica, you know what I'm saying? Not that it exists anymore, right? Or Wikipedia. What we're going to do is we're going to make you read a piece. Read a piece of the scroll. Imagine that. You've got to read a small piece so that the entire scroll is read once a year. Once a year, we're going to read this entire scroll. Okay, once you go through the whole thing. And people are like, where are you going? Should we go golfing? You're like, well, I'd like to. But, you see, I'm a member of the HMS, right? Because my great-grandfather was. And, you know, for a couple of hours on a morning, we kind of get together and we read this piece of scroll over here as well. Okay? How about this? How about you have a friend who approaches you, Whitney, and you're a member of the HMS, and they say, Whitney, what a beautiful society. So nice. So beautiful. I want to become part of it. What would you say? You're technically not allowed to. And they're like, oh, come on. But I want to be part of it. You would turn around and you would say, why?
Why would you want to become part of this? It doesn't happen to you. It happens to other people. Like, but I want such a beautiful thing and this whole getting together and the tattoo and the yellow star and all the rest of it. I like it so much. And I'm dating an HMS guy as well. I mean, I just throw that in there over there. So I really want to become a member of the HMS. And you would say, but why? You're fine as you are. This isn't happening to your ancestors. It happened to my ancestors. You don't need to do this. And they're insistent. And they're insistent. And they're insistent. I want to become part of it. Such a beautiful thing. It's so important. It's information. Please let me do it. You would say... if you want to, okay, if you want to, fine. But you should know that you've got to follow these rules. Like, all the time. It's a lifestyle change, isn't it? Right? You're going to have to wear this, you have to do this, and make the meals, and live in the tent, right? And the scroll once a week, and there's actually many, many more things you're going to have to do. And they're like, I'm in. You're like, you know what? I don't need time to think about it. How long do you need? I don't know, a year, 2 years. I mean, you need time to think about it. And try it out. Don't just jump in. This is important information. Right? This isn't nice. It's not like a golf club or a chess society. This is important stuff. It's the HMS. Right? People are denying this, so we've got to keep the legacy going. That's what we have to do. We've got to keep the legacy going. As Elie Wiesel, the famous Holocaust survivor, said, this whole remembrance of the Holocaust isn't so much about the survivors themselves anymore, it's about their descendants passing this off into the next generation. Okay, I'm hoping you're seeing where we're going with this. Yeah, a little bit, Sarah. So, we don't wear a yellow star, okay? We as Jews, we wear tzitzit, we dress differently. We don't get tattooed, but we get a circumcision, right? We have Pesach, right? Where we relive that experience. We live in a tent or a hut on Sukkot. Okay, we have the scroll. We hear accounts from our grandparents and great-grandparents. And we can say that this happens every single year to all these people. And people say to you, we don't believe this whole Jewish thing ever happened. We don't believe that the... Why not? Well, it's in the past. We never saw it. Well, you don't actually have to see something in order to know it. We know that from George Washington, he existed. What we need are witnesses. Not just witnesses who saw the events, but witnesses who relive the event every single year from when it happened. There's nothing stronger than that. Witnesses who relive the event again and again and again on an unbroken chain. This is very important. An unbroken chain is what you're going to need to keep it going, because these are living witnesses. I'll tell you something weird. They actually did try to set up such a society. And they brought 10,000 Jews to the Kotel. And they made a big thing. They made a scroll in different languages. And they tried to create... And they found it was very, very difficult to do. To keep people involved and want to be involved. Because you go 2-3 generations, and what happens? People aren't interested anymore. Right? They're like, ah, that was then. This is now. You know, this happens to my grandparents, my great-grandparents. Okay, we'll talk about it. It's a museum. I'll give some money to Yad Vashem. All fine things, but change my life because of it? That's already a big thing. But we're saying something very, very important. How do we know the Jewish claim is correct? Well, what is the Jewish claim? What is the claim to Judaism in general?
What is the claim that we make as a people? There's one central claim that differentiates us out from every other religion and sect and cult that has ever existed in a very, very major way. We're going to think about this. What is the claim of the Jewish people? One major claim. From that, a lot's going to come out. What's that claim? We believe in one God. Okay. What's the historical claim? You're absolutely right. We do believe in one God. You're absolutely right. So what's the historical claim? We were given the Torah. Now, every other religion claims some kind of book, okay? And some kind of prophecy. Like every religion, right? It's pretty much ever existed. Pretty much, you know? And the main five big ones we have nowadays, they also claim that. But the Jewish claim is actually really, really different in a very significant way. Yeah? That we were given
Israel.
The land of Israel is part of it, but that's not the claim. I mean, that's mentioned, but that's not the founding claim. In other words, what I'm asking you is this. One second, Avadali. What is the claim that we have of validity of the truth that makes it from history and not legend? That's really what I'm saying. That's what we're going back to right now. What's the claim itself? It's a very unusual claim because no other religion has ever, ever claimed it, which is really weird. What's the claim?
I was just
going to
say that in the Torah,
that Hashem promised Abraham. So funny, I know the Torah, yes, and we looked at Abraham, we spent a lot of weeks discussing Abraham, days discussing Abraham, and we did discuss that, but that's not the claim. Actually, all of that only takes on significance once this happens. Once this happens. Yeah?
We're
the chosen people. We do claim that. But what is that claim based upon? Yeah, Rosie?
The giving of the Torah at Har-Sinai.
The giving of the Torah at Har-Sinai. Now, why is that so significant? Why do we make such a big noise about the one event? We make big noise about... But that's our claim. The claim of truth. That was every religion claims something that it's true. Christianity does, and Islam does. And all these other religions that have come, and every single one of them will make a claim, right? Whether it's Jesus or Muhammad or Guru Nanak or any of these other leaders, you know, who've come forward and said, I have the truth. There's a guy right now in Mexico. I just saw a video. Someone sent it to me. He works for Jews for Judaism, you know, anti-missionary. There's a guy right now in Mexico who says he's Jesus. And he's got thousands and thousands of followers. And many of them very, very rich.
Are you serious?
Absolutely. There's many such things going on. Religion's a big business. Sure. Right, he's got a nice house, he's wearing a suit, drives a nice car, bought for him by his followers, you know? Let me ask you, maybe he is Jesus incarnate. Can you say he's not? I mean, it becomes an interesting question, doesn't it? How do we know? How do we know? He made a claim. He says... Good. I'll tell you his proof. One second, Rosie, I'm going to catch you in a second. I'm not ignoring you, heaven forbid. I like hearing you speak. You have a king. And the king has two sons. And one's going to have to take over from him, right? Rosie, you with me?
Yeah,
king, two sons. And the king dies without nominating one of his two sons. So what he does is, his two sons start to battle it out. Who's going to become the next king? And they're fighting backwards and forwards. Who's going to do it? Who's going to do it? And it's me, and I'm the one. And eventually, after a lot of, like, politicking and all this arguing and fighting and advertisements, one son turns around and says, I'm the next king. Come tonight to the town square, and I shall reveal to you the reason why. And they go to the town square, and everyone's there, and they say, okay, why should you win over your brother? And he says, I'll tell you why. Because last night, I had a dream, Shiri. And in my dream, God spoke to me. And my father was present and said that I am the chosen king who's going to carry on. The kingship. I thank you. I rest my case. What would you say to that person? Can you disprove that dream happened? No. Maybe it did, maybe it didn't. Are the people going to buy into it? Of course not. That's ridiculous. They can't buy into that. Why? Because if God and your father came to anyone in a dream, he wouldn't come to you in a dream. He'd come to the rest of us in dreams. Now that's impressive. You see, had your father and God come to anyone in a dream, let him come to the rest of us and not you. Now that would work very, very nicely. That would do it. What's the Jewish claim? The Jewish claim is unique. And that is God spoke to 3 million people at Mount Sinai. That's the claim in the Torah itself. Actually, 600,000 people a number of times. Now, that claim of 3 million is really important. Let's just think about it. Although it's recorded in the Torah itself, let's just listen to the claim itself. Actually, let's not try to figure out if it happened or not. Just the claim. Just the claim is important. What's the claim? Right, which every religion has. The claim is that 3 million, well, it's actually 600,000, but with, you know, women and kids, the rest of it, 3 million men, women, and children heard God speak and say, you're the chosen people. It's actually 600,000 mentioned the Torah a number of times, but if you add in their wives and kids, they round up to around 3 million individuals. Right, census taken, but it's about 3 million, let's say. Okay? 3 million men, women, and children. Roughly. Every other religion that has ever existed always claims the same thing. What's that? One person heard God speak. One person, and they're always by themselves. That's just interesting. Just the claim itself. Can you hear that? One person, whether it's Jesus or Muhammad, they're always by themselves. And they come home, they're like, you won't believe what happened to me. Oh my goodness. OMG. Literally. OMG. I was out in the field, and an angel came to me, the angel Gabriel, or it was God came to me, and they said, you're the chosen one, and from you shall become a religion. Go and convert the masses. How do you respond to that? Can you prove it didn't happen? Maybe it did. Maybe it didn't. We don't know because we weren't there. It's like the dream of the king. I don't know, Shiri. Maybe it didn't happen. Right? You can't expect to change my entire life based upon something that may have not happened. I mean, you could, but I'm going to need a lot. And I mean, oodles and noodles and oodles of faith to that claim. Like, really? You've got to be hyped. You gotta be like faithed out to get that one, you know what I'm saying? Because I don't know. You were by yourself. I mean, you should know actually that last night I had a dream, and in my dream, God came to me. Look at me, Rabbi Lawrence Hadjioff. And in the dream, God said to me that I, Rabbi Lawrence Hadjioff, am the chosen one. And, you know, the bed was shaking, and there was thunder and lightning, and my wife slept through it as usual. And it gave to me. And I've got to start a religion. I'm going to start right now. Yeah? You shall obey my laws. You shall pay me dues every single year. You shall follow my commandments. Who's in? Hello? Anybody? Hello? It'd be ridiculous to buy into it. I mean, you have a lot of faith in me as a person in order to buy into it, right? And that's just first-hand account. Imagine your kids and your grandkids, great-grandkids. Woo! That's really tough. That's really tough. It's just interesting. If I wanted to start a religion, would I start with a big claim or a small claim? A superior one or an inferior one? How would I do it? Let's just talk religions for a second, right? How would I want to start a religion? An inferior one or a superior claim? A superior claim would be good. What would you say is more superior? What would you say more superior? That God spoke to me alone last night, or God spoke to all of you? How about this? How about, I wasn't alone in my bed last night. I was in Madison Square Garden, and a big hand came out of the roof and pointed at me in front of everyone else and said, you're the chosen one. That'd be more impressive, right? That's a big claim to make. Why is such a big claim? I could just say that, but why would I never say such a thing? Because you'd have witnesses who saw it, talk about it. It would be in the papers, front page, back page, middle pages. Who wouldn't be talking about it? Everyone would be talking about it. People are like a known thing. You can't make such a claim if it never happened. Can you see that? God bless you. Right? You can't make such a claim if it never happen. The claim is so big. I can say I was by myself in my room, that I can say. And neither in or out. But to say that everyone was there and everyone saw it, that's verifiable. And not just a select group. So it was me and 15 of my apostles. We were there alone, you know? And we heard it. I'm not saying everyone. I'm saying, so your great-great-grandparents, and your great-great-grandparents, and your great-great, wherever it was there, we all saw it. 100 years ago, there was a gold rush in San Francisco. There were gold trees that came out of the ground for one day all over San Francisco, 100 years ago. Did that happen or not? I'm making that claim right now. Did it happen? No, it didn't. There was a gold rush. But gold trees coming out of the ground? No. No way. Why? We would have heard about it. It would have been passed around. News, information would have passed around about it. Something we would have seen. How about change the story, and my great-grandmother was in San Francisco, and a gold tree came out in her backyard for one day. Did that happen? You can't say it didn't happen. Maybe it did, maybe it didn't. You weren't there. And that's my claim. I would put that in the legend category. But when I have mass witnesses to something, and everyone knows about it, because it happened to them, that's the claim, it goes into history. No other religion even makes the claim. Why doesn't the Pope... This would be impressive. Let me just get this out. And we'll take questions. Why wouldn't the Pope stand on a balcony in front of all those people and say, you know, I've got to tell you something. I know. Because, you know, I heard it from the Pope came before me. And Pope one, you know, it wasn't just Jesus by himself when it started, you know, and a couple of miracles and performed in front of, you know, 10, 20, 50, 100 people. What actually happened was God spoke to millions of people and said that Jesus is the Messiah. Now, that would be a great claim to make. Why do they make that claim? Why doesn't the New Testament make that claim? Why doesn't the Quran make that claim? Because you can't make such a claim. Why? Because we would have heard about it. I'm like, hello? You can't turn up after the event, right? And make such a claim. Because everyone will turn around and say, well, if it happened 500,000 years ago, too, I would have heard about it. Such a big event would be known. Now, that would be a great claim to make, but no one makes it. There hasn't been a single religion in history. The Torah itself says that this, which we're talking about, this claim, we'll see the verses themselves soon, no one else can make. It's such a verifiable claim. Never mind what happened, it did happen, but that's not the point. The claim itself is so big. How can anyone else even make it unless it happened? Here's another question. How come those other religions don't just get rid of Judaism and say, nah, never happened? How about that? According to Christianity, right? Millions, if not billions of Christians. According to Islam, did God create the Jewish people with the Torah? Did that happen? The answer is yes. A priest, an imam, would have to admit, if they're honest, they'd have to admit, yes, the Old Testament is true. We don't call the Old Testament the Torah. They would have to admit it. Why? Why is that so important?
It's history. Led to their religion.
Because it led to their religion. Why don't they start the religion and say, like, eh, that's all nonsense. We'll start a new religion. They've always got to, like, get the Jews involved. You know? Isn't that interesting? I'm just thinking about it. Why can't they just start something new? It's a postulate. You know, postulates, you learn them at the end. Yeah, certain givens, you know? Like the short distance between two spots of the straight line that connects them, or if you put your Aunt Sheila in the draft at a bar mitzvah, she's going to complain. There's certain things that are given, right? You know they are going to... According to Christianity, according to Islam, it's a given. Jewish people, the chosen people. Okay, later on, this prophet came and they rejected him, so they lost it. Oh, this prophet came and that claim. So eventually, over history, it all kind of like... But they've got to admit that it happened. Why can't they just like, nah, never happened? Just say it's all nonsense. Why do you need the Old Testament? Just put a New Testament and finish with it. This is it. This is the Testament. Because it's based upon a knowledge base that was known. That was known and accepted for hundreds and thousands of years, that this is what happened. Now, over time, that's weakened. There's no doubt about it. The further away we are from those original events, just like the HMS, eventually, and that's in like in two generations, right? And we're like, what? from Mount Sinai 3,326 years ago, or 80 generations, you know? And we're still going. You know, one of the great miracles of the world is the fact that we're still here as a people. You do appreciate that. It doesn't make any sense whatsoever. You know, the Dalai Lama, many years ago, came to America, and he wanted to meet with a Jewish group. And he went to a Pesach Seder. Why? Because he's got a problem. See, he's kicked out of his country. Sound familiar? And he's now having all these next generation Buddhists being born and growing up in other countries. And they're kind of like, you know, not so into their parents' and grandparents' religion. So he wanted to see what the secret of Jewish survival was. So he went to a very good pace. He went to a Pesach Seder, you know? Because that's what the whole discussion is about, isn't it? I mean, that's what we're going to be talking about and discussing. How come we're still here? Although they come and try to kill us every generation. Because he's got this thing of the second, third generation who are trying to, you know, get out. So how do we keep this going? How do we keep the whole Buddhist movement going? That we're not an original country, different language, different land. It's not easy. Right? There's a lot of Buddhists going off the derech. OTD Buddhists, you know what I'm saying? It's understandable. You know, the next generation, they come to the new country, the new land, they forget their traditions, they forget their culture. He's trying to figure out how to keep it going. It's not so easy for him. He's struggling a lot with it. That is what I want to share with you today. Any thoughts, any comments? From 3 minutes. Mina?
You know how there's, like, a mad amount of, like, Arabs, Muslims, all that, and Christians also?
Yeah.
So why would they believe something from
one? Great, great question. The truth is, if they really believe in it, and they practice it, they have to have great faith, which they have. Actually, they are faith-based religions. Judaism is not a faith-based religion. I have to explain it. They follow it, yeah. They follow it. It's interesting because those religions that we discussed, the big ones, you know, I mean, I don't want to include Hinduism in this, although there's billions of those followers, right? Because that's not even a religion. That's more of an experience, you know? They like kind of like mush together all the other claims. But yeah, they have faith. It's pretty impressive. I mean, if they're all believers, right? We just have faith it happened. But what's it based upon? Happens to be that Judaism is based upon a claim. Their claim is pretty weak. And they've done a good job. You know, their cells, you know, I mean, they're losing members, but they're getting people. It's also pretty simple, right? To become Jewish, you got to do a lot of stuff, you know? Convert, oh my goodness, right? But for them, they pledge allegiance, you accept Jesus the Messiah, you're in. That's pretty much it. It is a difficult thing. Wear a cross if you want to, right? Go to church if you want to, you know? And,
a Muslim is like
intense, though. No, it's not crazy. You'll be a religious one, but you're in. Not so much. Really? I don't suggest it. Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Oh, there's many such stories like that. I'm obsessed with these stories. There's loads of them.
You said, like, the only way to, for someone to, like, validate whether there's, like, mass, like, if this is an Arab, and these people are going to continue on living and having kids and, like, saying, like, yeah, they're all witnesses of
him. Yeah. If it continues. Yeah. And they will, yes. But what are they witness to? To some guy who says, I woke up and Jesus came to me in a dream. Send you the video. It's pretty wild. It's interesting, right? Yeah.
I was doing research once about other religions and, like, we have to do research on how to like convert. And I was on this website, like, some type of Christianity, and it said become a Christian, like that type of. And I clicked on it to, like, see how. And I clicked on it, and it goes, "Congratulations, you are now converted."
You got wow. conversion.com. You went on, you clicked the little button, you're in.
Yeah.
Did you get a free iPad with that? With that conversion? No, you didn't get a free iPad with that. Yeah. We're going to pick this up in the future. We'll change topic tomorrow and go more into this topic. Have a great and successful day.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.